think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 259 of Low Limit Football on this 21st of October, 2019. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, the MLS playoffs are in full swing as we get back from the international break. Most home teams held serve and advanced, but one did not. We'll let you know who lost and the tasty match it sets up for the upcoming week. Speaking of international break, Ukraine, Spain, Poland, Belgium, Russia, and Italy have all qualified for Euro 2020 after this week's international break. The United States falls flat on its face after a 2-0 loss to Canada in CONCACAF Nations League. You're going to get our reaction to that match. And the Copa Libertadores gets set to start off the second leg of their semifinals. We're going to talk about that matchup and more with our very special guest, Roy Neymar from Mundo Albiceleste, who will be joining us in just a moment. Let me get my co-host in here first, though, Mr. Roberto Rojas. How was your week, my man?
Week was good. Yeah. Weekend, not very good.
Not so good.
I think we could both attest to what we could see from our different sporting level as our team got eliminated over the weekend.
Yep.
But the week was great. I went to my first baseball game ever. Went to Yankee Stadium for game four.
Game four.
I forgot. Game four of the ALCS. It unfortunately didn't go the way I thought it would be. They lost, but it was a great experience. But let me tell you something, Joe. There's something that's been blowing my mind so far. It's been a debate for days. I mean, is Carlos Vela a top 20 global player?
Really? This is where we're going to start?
Come on. Yeah, hell yeah. Why not? Dude, if we're going to stick with jokes, let's continue with a joke.
All right, I guess. And the joke, I guess, would be Alexi Lalas, right? Because Alexi Lalas said he came out on Twitter and said that Carlos Vela is one of the top 20 players in the world. That was the actual terminology he used.
The top 20 global players.
Global players.
Not just like global, which I would assume means players in the world.
Unless we're talking about a different globe. I mean, are we talking about one of those globes that sits in the corner of your house? But in all honesty, we're talking about the world.
I mean, I have two globes right in front of me, Joe, but I don't think I can find one where Vela is a top 20 player. Could be wrong.
And then I proceeded to make a list of 20 number nines, not wingers, not forwards, 20 number nines who are better than Carlos Vela. I don't have the list completely handy at the moment. It's on my Twitter. I responded. And in all seriousness, I mean, you know, I guess it's the clickbait, right? It's the hot take world.
We're living in an era of hot takes and clickbaits and controversial statement. I mean, what the hell's going on with people on Twitter nowadays? That's Twitter nowadays. We saw this with I looked at a tweet yesterday during the United Liverpool game, and everyone is having a discussion about VAR and, you know, how it's utilized. Properly. The one tweet that I enjoyed was this one. I think it was from John McKenzie, and he said, "The worst thing about VAR is that it leads to opinions on Twitter."
Oh my god, hot take. Seriously.
No, but that's a true one.
Is it though? I mean, would those opinions would still exist on Twitter, with or without VAR.
The whole debate, it's a reference to the whole debate thing.
No, that's I know. But you know, at the same time, just thinking about it, it's like, wait a minute. Last year, we had plenty of opinions on the EPL, but there was no VAR. But it's just, it's a new avenue of opinion, right? I guess.
Right? Alternative facts, remember?
What's that?
Alternative facts, remember?
Alternative facts, exactly.
Not lies, not fake news.
Let's jump into it, because I know we've got Roy waiting in the wings. So I want to, Rob, I want to give you tonight's trivia question, and it is my honor. It's a Serie A question, sort of-ish, right? Okay. Claudio Ranieri was hired as the manager of Sampdoria this week, or this past week, making it the 20th team he has ever coached, or the 20th different coaching position he's taken. Can you name the teams outside of Italy which he coached? So there are eight teams. I will tell you that there are eight teams. Okay. One of the teams he's coached twice. Can you let me know the team that he's coached twice? Nine stints outside of Italy, eight different teams, one of the teams he's coached twice.
Okay.
Cool? All right. Yes. All right, so let's get our guest in here, man. I'm excited. We are very lucky to have back on the show from Mundial Biceleste, Roy Neymar. Roy, welcome back to the show. It's always great to have you on. How have you been?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. Fun to be back. And I believe I actually have the answer to your trivia question, which I will not say. I'm not going to spoil in case I'm right. I think I remember... I'm like 90% sure I know the answer to that one. But good to be back, guys. Good to be back.
Nice. You know, and I'm wondering if you have the answer to the team he coached twice or the eight teams. Or do you have both?
No, the team he coached twice.
Cool. All right. You'll have to message it to me or something on Twitter or something. So, you know, DM me so that I'll let you know if you're right. So, obviously we're here to talk about Copa Libertadores. We get the second leg of Copa Libertadores coming up this week, second leg of the semifinals. And, you know, Rob, a term that you and I love is the term shithousery, right? And
you could say that now because we're not FCC regulated. Exactly.
And Copa Libertadores, I guess, in the past few years hasn't really started unless there's shithousery involved. And I've got to tell you, I think we're finally there, unfortunately. And that's based on the where the final is going to be held. The final will be held in Santiago, Chile. And now with all the civil unrest, Roy, we have the potential of this match not being played in Chile. We look back last year at where it was a two-legged affair, and the second leg had to be moved to Madrid because of Super Clásico and the mess that it created. When Boca and River fans are the civilized part of the program, that's a scary thing. But we actually sort of have that right now because Chile is kind of like giving them the hold my beer. But I wanted to get Roy, I wanted to get your opinion on what's going on in Chile right now. Do you feel that the final will still be held there? And let's say by some odd chance it needs to be moved. Where would it be moved to? I know we've announced Maracanã for next year for the final, but if this had to be moved, where would it go to?
If I had to take a wild guess, I'd say move it to Montevideo. Move it to Uruguay. You're going to have an Argentine, you're going to have a Brazilian team in there. Not far from both countries, obviously, geographically speaking. A very historical city, both in terms of, you know, football-wise and, you know, non-footballing-wise. I'd say move it to Montevideo, okay. Play it there, and get it over with. It's, look, for once, I can't say I could blame CONMEBOL in terms of, you know, hosting the tournament in Chile. It's not, or the final, rather. You know, it's not their fault that this happened. But for somehow, some way, shit always just hits the fan when it comes to CONMEBOL. The only thing I'll say is this: at least it's not played in Madrid of all places. At least the Copa Libertadores is not played in Madrid of all cities in the world. They could have played it in Bangkok and it would have made more sense.
Could have been Dubai.
Playing it in the, mm-hmm. Could have been Dubai. At least Dubai, you know, it's money. Like, it's like
right.
Flat out saying, hey, we're giving you guys a big sum of money. Let's play it there. But Madrid? Anyways, but yeah, if it was up to me, I'd play it in Montevideo because it's kind of like a neutral ground, right, for in terms of both teams or whoever, you know, makes it to the final.
Mm. Yeah, and, you know, Joe, I'll even go back to you in this one because, you know, we had to talk about how, you know, the fact that South America wanted to be more like Europe in a way. I mean, that's a big comparison to what we saw in the final last season. But at the same time, you know, we talked about the single neutral final, which is a complete contrast. And you can remember the entire debate that was being made, if you remember, Joe, about why this final would not make sense, how it just takes off the mystique of what a Copa Libertadores is and what made it different from all the other competitions in the world to have those two-legged finals. When they do have that kind of neutral final and they finally announce it, there's still something happening. I mean, what's next at this point?
Well, CONMEBOL going to CONMEBOL. And I think that, you know, by all reports, by the way, I think it should be said that by all reports, it seems like everything is going to be okay to have the final in Chile. But, you know, like we said, CONMEBOL is going to CONMEBOL. And they seem to always do this. And there's always a mess, right? No matter what. We talked about last year with the issue, even what was it, 3 or 4 years ago when the players were attacked at La Bombonera, I believe, right? And which got Boca expelled. I mean, it seems like there's always something. And unbelievably, we got to the first leg of the semifinals with a Superclásico without an issue. It's just amazing that how, you know, I don't ever picture South America in general to be almost like this third worldish kind of area. Do you know what I mean? But these are the kinds of political strife and problems that we're seeing pop up in South America that seem to like point to that direction instead of where you would think of it as kind of first world nations and that sort of thing. So it's bewildering to me. I mean, unfortunately, it's the world we live in. And Roy, I do like your solution. Montevideo sounds like a great neutral position, you know, and like you said, you've got a Brazilian team, you've got an Argentinian team somewhere in the middle. I think in a safe and metropolitan type city like Montevideo would be a great place to hold it as an alternative place. I don't think you can move this to Maracanã earlier. You can move it to somewhere in Argentina, you know, or I think Real, you know, moving it to Madrid is insanity. But you know, unfortunately, we've seen it time and time again, not only in South America, we've seen it everywhere. We see the world mix itself into sport, whether it be the Olympics. We've seen all kinds of tragedies at the Olympics from time to time. We've seen even the World Cup, how people make a big deal about how the stadiums that were used in 2014 are now just wastelands in Brazil and all the money that was spent and the political or the politicizing of that tournament and what we saw there. And again, unfortunately, we live in a world where sport is not the only thing. And now you have to take in consideration the civil unrest that we have in Chile and how it will affect this tournament. Hopefully, again, everything will go to plan. But there is always that specter in the background.
Yeah, I think so. I think and in a way, Joe, obviously you don't want to go too political in what's going on in South America as a whole. I think we're seeing that kind of unrest there. In Uruguay, there really isn't anything. I mean, knock on wood on this one, but you know, it does seem like a logical place to play a final if it is going to be indeed moved. But we're still a month away, and we still need to define a finalist. Rob, so having said
actually, if I can add real quick. Yes. The fact that we're talking about this in Montevideo makes sense to all three of us, I think is something that should be taken into consideration for the year after 2021, after Maracanã, the next Libertadores final. I think Montevideo should definitely be in the discussion for having that final as it would be the next place.
Definitely. So having said that, we still have a final to talk about. And obviously the big one that we'll be talking about is the Superclásico second leg. Obviously, in the first leg, we saw River Plate come off victorious. 2-0 win over Boca Juniors over the El Monumental from goals from Rafael Santos Borré and Ignacio Fernandez. Roy, going in real quick, I mean, we know the team and we know how important this River Plate side has been for months, years, you would say, under Marcelo Gallardo, with the team that they have. I mean, arguably the best team in all of South America. But now having to go to La Bombonera against you would expect a red fire hot Bombonera, I don't see them losing that momentum heading into the second leg. I just really don't see. I think there is that gulf of talent and the difference between both these two that, you know, it is a Superclásico, yes, and anything can go, but I think River really is in pole position for another final. What do you think about that?
As much as it pains me to say, I think River Plate, led by Marcelo Gallardo, will be lifting the Libertadores trophy. I think they're going to make the final. The golf and talent, at least the way they're playing, is just too much. I'm a Boca supporter. I'm not a River Plate fan at all. So I'm not happy, you know, when I say this. But watching that first leg, Boca was lucky that they only lost by 2 goals. Very, very lucky. Now, second leg at, you know, at La Bombonera is different than Monumental. I'm sure, obviously, the fans and everything. I'm expecting Boca to get a goal. I don't doubt that. But I don't expect Boca to keep a clean sheet. And I think that's what's going to hurt. River is just playing very well. It's their tournament. Unfortunately, they've made it their tournament. And this used to be Boca's tournament. You know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, this used to be Boca's tournament. And now it appears to be River's tournament. Last year was last year. This year is this year. I feel like Boca should have won it last year. But, you know, we'll leave that in the past. And this time around, I think Rivers just has the edge for whatever reason. 2-0 is a lot. I know, you know, Boca's one goal and then 2-1. Who knows what could happen? But I feel like River has at least one goal in them, unfortunately. And if I were a betting man, which I'm not, but if I were a betting man, I'd have River River qualifying to the final. But I'd say a 1-1 draw. I'll say a 1-1 draw.
Roy, I want to jump in here quick because I agree with you. I mean, obviously, the writing is on the wall. They need to overcome a 2-goal deficit here. And I'm kind of surprised. Usually when I'm watching Boca, you know, play in this competition, I see Carlito Tevez come off the bench. But at the same time, he has been, I believe he's actually their leading goal scorer in league right now for Boca Juniors. So why is it that Alfaro doesn't play him or doesn't start him up front in this particular tournament? And do you see him possibly starting in the second leg?
To answer the first question, I think Tevez at this point in his career is probably not fit enough to play the full 90 minutes. I think you'll get a good 45 minutes out of Tevez, and then you'll probably have to sub him off at halftime. And even in that 45 minutes, who knows what kind of Tevez you're going to get. This season, he hasn't played too bad. You know, he's done fairly well, credit to him. He's kind of like a super sub at this point. I think, you know, I think Alfaro was using him as a super sub right now. Does he start? I don't know. He has that experience. He has the will. He has the drive. The talent is there. If Carlos Tevez shows up, Carlos Tevez could dominate. Unfortunately, that's becoming less and less. I don't know if I would start him. I don't know if he will start. I don't think he will. Once more, if I had to put money on it, I don't think Tevez starts. If he does, play a solid 45 minutes and sub him off, because he tends to disappear, in my opinion. And again, don't forget his age. You know, he's not 29 or 30 anymore. He's up there in age. He's still good, you know, longtime servant of the club, came back a few times. But he's not your go-to guy anymore. You know what I mean? He's not a focal point. Tevez starting, you know you're going to get some goals. You know you're going to get a good play or, you know, a good dribble or a good goal or pass or whatnot. Now it's kind of like, okay, we have Tevez. He could help. Will he help is the question. And I think for that reason alone, I don't see him starting too much. I think if Boca need a goal, let's say it's 2-1 for River, or, you know, or 1-0 Boca, and, you know, Boca needs that goal. I think bringing on Tevez gives them that momentum, as opposed rather to maybe someone else.
So now looking into River Plate as a whole, I think the one man that has really transformed this team and made it, you know, the Libertadores their competition, as you said, is Marcelo Gallardo. You know, coming into now his fifth year at the club, has already become the most successful manager in their history, winning 10 trophies, which include 2 Libertadores and possibly heading into a third one. We feel as if, though, and Joe and I have been talking about, I think a lot of people, that he needs to take this next back step to a bigger team. You know, there have been already rumors coming over the last few weeks following the lackluster start that Barcelona was having, that he would indeed replace Ernesto Valverde to the team soon. But having said that, Roy, you know, is he capable enough to, assuming that what happens with Barcelona this season, that they do get rid of Valverde, that we see someone like Gallardo making that jump? Is he ready for that big jump to a big team like Barcelona? Or do you feel that he's maybe more capable of doing it in another league, maybe somewhere in Ligue 1, because we know his experience in playing as a player over there in Monaco and PSG, maybe in Italy, maybe another team in Spain, maybe even in the Premier League as well. You know, what's next for Marcelo Gallardo, and how soon do we see him in Europe?
Very good question. Look, I'm a okay, obviously I mentioned I'm not a River Plate fan, far from it. I respect the work he's done. I respect the work he's done with the team, with the club, with the younger players, with the players in general. I respect that. I would definitely love to see him in Europe. As a Barcelona fan, I'd love to see him at Barcelona. Absolutely love it. Now, people are going to say, oh, well, you know, kind of maybe the same thing happened with Gerardo Martino, Tata Martino, you know, with Newell's and then Paraguay and whatnot. And then, you know, he went to Barcelona and didn't really have, you know, a successful season. The thing with Gallardo, and no disrespect to Martino, is Gallardo's he's a winner. Gallardo's a winner. He wins with River and he wins the big tournaments. He wins under pressure. And that's a big, big thing. You know, not all coaches have that. You have some coaches that are extremely talented, for example, and I'm not picking, but for example, Pochettino, you know, Mauricio Pochettino, no doubt, one of the best coaches in the world. A fantastic work he's done with Tottenham. But you would think with the players he's had at his disposal and the kind of seasons, you know, that have happened, whether in the Champions League or the FA Cup or whatnot, that he would at least have one trophy to show for it, which he doesn't. Compare that to Marcelo Gallardo, where, hey, you know what? Gallardo is actually able of, you know, capable of winning. Now, does he go to Barcelona? I don't know. I mean, I'd love to see him at Barcelona, no doubt about it. I think he's someone that could do very well in Spain, be it at Barcelona or elsewhere. I would absolutely hate, and I mean hate, to see him in France. Even if we were to take over at PSG, at Paris Saint-Germain, I would hate to see him in France, just because for me personally, I don't think it's a league that could challenge him too much. I think Spain, Italy, Germany in the Bundesliga, but that's obviously probably won't ever happen. Or even in England, I could definitely see him in one of those leagues. Preferably in Spain. I think he could do very well in Spain. And you know what? As a Barcelona fan, I'd love to see him in Barcelona. He can't possibly do any worse than Valverde, for example. He's good with the youth players. He has a style. He kind of sticks to it pretty much. And he knows how to win. If not in Barcelona, yeah, definitely in Spain. I could see him doing very well in Spain, actually. Taking a team like a Valencia or maybe a Sevilla or whatnot, I could see him being successful in Spain.
Now, the reason why I asked this, and I'm going to do this to Joe as well, because, you know, there was also another rumor, not from a team in Europe, but in a team that obviously is close to our hearts, Joe, well, at least in the league, it's MLS. And many people there were even rumors of Inter Miami getting him as their first ever coach. And, you know, seeing the pattern that we've seen of coaches coming stateside, you know, like Tata Martino, you know, what we see with Guillermo Barros Schelotto to LA Galaxy or Matias Almeida over there at San Jose, you know, what a coup this would be for the league, and not just for in Miami as a whole as well, but for a league to get Marcelo Gallardo to MLS to open a new team. Do you see that happening, Joe? Or do you feel like, you know, this with all no disrespect to MLS as well, that he is capable of doing what he's doing at River Plate as that kind of winning mentality, as Roy had mentioned, over there in Europe?
Well, I think I'm gonna start with the second part first, because I think Gallardo will do it wherever he goes, whether it be Inter Miami, whether it be Barcelona, whether it be an Italian side, you know, AC Milan, who seems to be looking for a coach every week now. I think wherever he goes, he will be successful. That's just the kind of coach he is right now, or at least that's what he's shown us over the last few years consistently. And I think that's the key, is this: his consistency has been there. He's not been a guy that's failed. And even though he's lost and gained and lost and gained players, he still manages his consistency. So, you know, I think he could definitely do it. You know, now flip from the Inter Miami side. I think anything is possible. I think David Beckham there. I think David Beckham's attracting a lot of eyes. I think his name carries quite a bit of weight. And I think because of that, he's on a path where he could possibly bring in a Gallardo. Now, is that the kind of splash that David Beckham wants to make? I think is the question we have to start asking, because does Beckham want him? Does Beckham want Ancelotti? Does Beckham want Zidane? I mean, we you know, it's funny how we talk about Valverde being on the hot seat week in and week out, which is amazing to me, because he's only got Barca in first place right now, you know, and they're on their way in the Champions League. So, you know, a week ago we're talking about Zidane, and Zidane had moved himself into first place at Real Madrid, and obviously he's got the chance to correct things in the Champions League. So these guys are on the hot seat all the time, but I think David Beckham would want to attract a big name. And I'm, you know, now that I'm stuck on the Zidane name, I think Zidane might be more of a choice for Inter Miami than Gallardo, strictly because of the tie the two of them had as they were teammates at Real Madrid. So you have to think about all those things. And you know, I think, well, would Gallardo be a successful coach here? Absolutely. Could he take an Inter Miami, a team he's building from the ground up, and build them into something that would be successful? Of course I do. But I don't think he will come, even though Scilotto's had some success here already. We saw this, you know, Almeida, although he couldn't get the San Jose over the finish line, did very well as an Argentinian. You know, Tata Martino, obviously, with what he did last year with Atlanta United. We've had successful Argentinian coaches, and Gallardo would just be another one of those. But I think his aspirations are probably more towards Europe, and I think David Beckham wants to make a big name splash back here in the United States with maybe a much more recognized name in the States than Gallardo, and I think that person would be Zidane.
So from your personal, just one last thing,
yeah.
From your personal take, knowing that what you see at Gallardo for River Plate, what league would you like to see him be at? Or maybe not just the team, but just what league would be a perfect spot for him?
Italy. I mean, I think Spain would be great for him as well, but I'd love to see him in Italy. I think he'd be highly successful in Italy. I think he comes in and takes over, you know, whether I don't know that anybody wants this AC Milan dumpster fire right now, but that is an option. You know, I think Fiorentina would be a great option for him. Lazio, if people Inzaghi moves along, I think Lazio would be a nice spot for him as well. But I think he could take over a solid Italian side and take them to that next level. And those are the kinds of the teams I'm talking about. I don't think Atalanta is a good spot for him, although the attacking style and the attacking players Atalanta has right now might be to his liking. But at the same time, I think Gasperini is such a great fit there right now that I don't think Gasperini is going anywhere. Juve's Juve, right? Inter right now with Antonio Conte, no one's going to replace Conte there right now. Ancelotti at Napoli, that's not going to happen. So I think places like Fiorentina, Roma, Lazio, AC Milan, you know, I think those would be great places for him to go. I think when you look at the Spanish side, I think obviously Barcelona, I mean, that's the dream job, right? Real Madrid would also be along the lines there as well. But I think a place like Valencia would be a great spot for him also. Even Getafe, who has been, you know, they were successful last year and they're still continuing with that success this year, I think would be another great spot for him if they wanted to continue to spend the money. A guy like Gallardo would be great there as well. So, you know, those are kind of the places I'd look at, Rob. And, you know, those would be the places for me that Gallardo, I think, would best fit in. Roy, I want to take that question. I want to throw it to you. Where in Europe do you feel like, if you had to give me some teams, like the short list, what would be the short list for Gallardo?
I'd start with the you know, Champions League, Europa League teams in Spain. So a Sevilla, a Valencia type of thing, you know, those two teams. I'd love to see my Villarreal for whatever reason, just because I have a soft spot for them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, those two, three teams. In Italy, you pretty much nailed it. it's obvious it's not going to be a Juventus or an Inter or a Napoli. Although I'd love to see him at Napoli, for example.
Yeah.
Like you said, I don't think anyone wants to touch AC Milan right now, and I think it would be managerial suicide for Gallardo to take Milan at least at this stage in his career. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned Madrid, but I think that one's going to Pochettino. I'll add a little bit to what you said. I think Zidane goes to the MLS, and Madrid finally get Pochettino, and then whatever happens in England with Tottenham happens. If it were up to me, I'd love to see him, like I said, Valencia, Sevilla, Villarreal. Those are my top three teams. Again, I'm biased. I'd love to see him in Spain. It's my favorite league to watch. If it's in Italy, I'd love to see him in Italy as well, because I think he could definitely grow tactically as a coach in Italy. I'd love to see him there against some very, very strong coaches. But, yeah, if it was up to me, it would be those three teams, pretty much.
Great shout on Sevilla, too, by the way. I didn't think about them, but that would be another great spot for them. You know, we're at the semifinals of the Copa Libertadores. We didn't talk about the other semifinal yet, so I want to spend a second on there. And actually, it's of the two matchups, it's become the tastier one because of the aggregate score. Flamengo and Gremio get at it again on Wednesday. Flamengo trying to return to the Copa Libertadores final for, I think, the first time in, I want to say it was like 20 or 30 years. I was doing a little bit of research before we came on the air. Obviously Gremio is made it to the semifinals, I think, for the third year in a row. So that, you know, obviously successful. How do you see this second leg breaking down in Rio between the two teams?
No, I think this final, I think the semifinal really is much more open than the first leg. The other series between Boca and River. I think what we've seen of both these two teams, kind of a yin and yang, you would say. I think with Grêmio, kind of in a similar situation to what River is doing. Obviously, didn't get the same success, but with a manager like Renato Gaúcho, who has been on there for 3 years now, which is a reasonable long time, knowing the state of how Brazilian football likes to maintain their managers. Sometimes they don't have them for such a long time. I think they're really creating something there with the likes of players like Luan and Everton and many other players on that team, Matheus Henrique as well. You know, they really have something special, and they really could spoil the party. But I just think with this Flamengo side, kind of this, I don't know if we could use the term, but kind of like Galactico-esque, you know, they get a new manager in Jorge Jesus, who had coached in Portugal for many years. And then you look at all the signings that they made during the offseason with players such as Gabigol, who's been on tremendous form, almost averaging a goal a game in the last few weeks, you know, Descarreta, you know, getting players like Rafinha and Felipe Luis that bring in experience from Europe. I mean, this team looks very good. And I generally think that playing in a packed Maracanã, you know, in a stage where they haven't been to a semifinal in almost over three decades, you know, is probably the most popular team in all of Brazil, maybe one of the most popular team in all of South America, knowing the state of the club that it is. I don't see how they're going to fail in this game. I generally don't see how that's going to happen. So I would have to see and pick Flamengo as your finalist there with River, which I think in the end, when you were thinking about this tie back, when you were trying to pick a reasonable final, maybe back in the round of 16 when the draw was made in May, I think we wouldn't be surprised if we had seen these two teams, you know, the Argentine side, Brazilian side, two of the best teams in all of South America fighting for that Libertadores spot. We were trying to repeat, Flamengo looking to repeat, to win their first Libertadores in almost four decades. I think we have the right final there, and I generally see that being made. I mean, Roy, do you agree with me, or do you feel like maybe Grêmio has much of a bigger battle to pull out?
No, I fully agree with you, Rob. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride for Grêmio. You touched on two players, or maybe even three, and I'm going to add the third one if you didn't. You mentioned Felipe Luis, you mentioned Rafinha, and you added, and there was Alves as well, Diego Alves, the goalkeeper for Flamengo. That's experience. That's international experience. That's European experience. That's experience as a whole. These guys know how to win. Rafinha did it with Bayern. Felipe Luis, if I'm not mistaken, he won the league with Atletico. Played in a couple of Champions League finals as well. Diego Alves, too, penalty shot stopping machine, essentially. Look, I'll be very, very honest. I've watched maybe two or three matches of Grêmio this entire season, and that's mostly because of Walter Kahneman, the Argentine center back that plays for them. I've seen a bit more of Flamengo, and they just look a better side. And, you know, the second leg isn't, you know, Flamengo's essentially playing at home the second leg. First match 1-1 at Grêmio. I'm going to go with Flamengo on this one. I told you, I'm going with Flamengo, I'm going with River, and then hopefully Flamengo wins the final.
Rob, I'm going to go back to you real quick. Obviously, Roy's given us a Flamengo River Plate final with River Plate, to his chagrin, lifting the trophy. Rob, what do you say? Do you say it's Flamengo? Do you think Grêmio gets in there? What do you think?
As much as this might pain to hear Roy say, I think I would have to disagree. I think this River Plate side has something special. You know, they really have managed the same side that they have in a long time, you know, which is rare, I think, now in South America, with all these players being poached by the big teams all across the world, you know, to maintain kind of the similar side that they won the Libertadores last year. Mm-hmm. You know, to see that be done a second year in a row would be phenomenal. This Flamengo side, I think, just has a bit less than what the River Plate side has. I think there's something special. I think with Gallardo and the familiarity that he has in this competition with these players and that oozing confidence, you know, they call him Napoleon because of coming in with a plan and using it and having the players all in trust and trust him with that plan. I generally see River Plate winning their second straight. I know it pains you to hear that, Roy, but as a Boca fan, but I think I see River Plate lifting that title in Santiago next month.
you know, just to jump in, go ahead. I'm sorry, Roy. Go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry. I was just going to add, look, I don't necessarily disagree with you. I just hope it doesn't happen.
So that's fine.
That's pretty much it.
No, as a lot of Boca fans don't want that to happen either, so I understand.
But I want to add, you know, I think Flamengo gets there as well over Grêmio. I mean, obviously having the second leg at home, having the away goal, I think these are all big pieces for them and having the experience. But I do think at the same time, of the two teams between Grêmio and Flamengo, I think Flamengo is the best positioned to possibly take out River Plate because of their abundance of experience. You know, a team, players that know how to win at the international level and win on the big stage. So I think, especially in a one-off where we're not playing over two legs, I think the opportunity is there for Flamengo to win that title for the first time in 38 years because of the experience that they have on the pitch. And it's going to be an interesting final, I think, regardless of whether Grêmio or Flamengo get there. But I do think that Flamengo is probably the best poised team to be successful and knock off River Plate and keep them from winning back-to-back titles. So, gentlemen, Roy, actually, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Where can everybody find you and your work before we let you go?
Yes, I'm on Twitter at Roy Nemer, R-O-Y-N-E-M-E-R, and at MundoAlbiceleste.com. So Roy Nemer or MundoAlbiceleste.com. You can find me there. And that's the only two spots.
Fantastic, man. Again, thanks for joining us and helping us break down the Libertadores. Definitely enjoyed it and looking forward to the next time we have you on the show, man.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure. Always fun. I remember last time I was here, we spoke Copa America. Mm-hmm. That was already, 4 or 5 months ago now?
Yeah.
So, it's good to be back, guys. Always good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, man. Have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
And that was Roy Nemer from Mundo Albiceleste joining us, and great to catch up with him again. Rob, obviously a little bit of a flip-flop on the show tonight. Let's go to opening thoughts and something that we probably should have gotten Roy's take on when he was with us because he lives in Canada. And that is the U.S. defeat to Canada 2-0 up in Toronto in the CONCACAF Nations League. Obviously, we've seen a lot of reaction on this side of the States after this, many of them, and I point really to Taylor Twellman because I think he's been the most vocal of all of them, basically saying that, listen, here we are 2 years removed from Trinidad and Tobago, and we've not gotten better. We've digressed. We've not progressed. And, you know, to make the 2022 World Cup, to make the 2026 World Cup, even though we're the hosts, as long as we still have qualification, this is a problem. This is a major problem. Now, you know, I think, Rob, you and I, to a man, since they hired Greg Berhalter, we have said no. Fire him, get rid of him, Berhalter out, all that stuff. I'm starting to change course a little bit, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to say Ernie Stewart out. I'm starting to say Carlos Cordero out. Because let's be honest, if the media has pointed out a massive problem with Greg Berhalter, that he's not qualified to be a coach, that really he's a 500 coach, he's a mediocre coach in a league built on trying to be mediocre, right? They're built on the NFL model. They're trying to be 500. And if he's a coach that can only manage 500 in a 500 league, what does that tell you? He's not creative enough to be Tata Martino. He's not creative enough to be, some of these other coaches. And here we are. And he is a 500 coach, and he goes to the national team, and he's mediocrity at best. So now, if you are the U.S. Soccer Federation, and you're looking at his body of work that he's given you for the national team, and then you compare it to his previous body of work, you know, in MLS, you've got to say to yourself, this guy's not cutting it, and they've got to fire him. And they've got to fire him now before we start qualifying for the World Cup, because we need to get a new coach in, we need to have a process in place, and we need to move forward with it. If they can't recognize it, then it's on their hands, it's on their head, and they're the ones that should be fired. I mean, that's where I'm at this point. This is what this 2-0 loss has told me. Rob, I want your opinion on this first, and then I'm going to give you a quick little anecdote after that, but what do you think about what's going on so far?
I think it's embarrassing. I think what we saw from the hiring of Greg Berhalter, that something wrong was going to happen. Yes, the old cliche, yes, give him a chance, see what he does, but I didn't give him a chance. No, I did not give him a chance. The minute he was hired, I did not give him a chance at all, because I don't see why we would hire him. Why? Because his brother works, and it's kind of that, what's it called? There's a term that's used to help you. You know, I scratch your back, you scratch mine. You know, that kind of nepotism. Yeah, there we go. That is being used at U.S. Mm-hmm. soccer is a shame. Mm-hmm. I think we see that all across the national team, even in the federation, even MLS at this point. That people are just apathetic at this point, and you know, this loss just is becoming. Eventually, I would say the last straw, because this is unacceptable, the way that they have to play, that everyone gets so hyped up, a 7-0 win over Cuba, and then everyone thinks it's all right, but then they lose 2-0 to Canada, and everything just goes straight to fire. I generally think that if something is going to be done, it has to be done now, because qualification starts next year, and I just think that in this avenue that U.S. soccer is going with this manager, that they're not going anywhere.
Right.
They are not going anywhere with Berhalter. They're not going anywhere with Jay Berhalter. They're not going anywhere with Ernie Stewart. I don't see any reason that they're going to go anywhere if this kind of crony capitalism and nepotism is going to help U.S. soccer move forward, because I don't see it. I generally do not see it at all.
I agree. And I'm not saying bring in Tata Martino. I'm not saying anything like that. I'm just saying you've made major mistakes, U.S. Federation. You've made major mistakes here moving forward after the 2-1 loss to Trinidad and Tobago. You've made major mistakes. You've done nothing to correct them. And you're too you know, nearsighted to realize that you've made mistakes, and we've got to correct them. One thing I wanted to bring up, the 7-0 victory over Cuba last week. And I know a lot of U.S. fans were like, here we are. We're back. We're rolling. I mean, granted, it was Cuba. Four of their top five players had defected, you know, going into the match. They had nobody. And I got into a little discussion with Robert Burns on Twitter. I don't know if you remember seeing that at all, Rob.
No.
But I got into a discussion with him about it that, you know, I think we were up 4-0 at the half or 5-0 at the half, right? It might have even been 6. I can't even remember right now. But I said that goals were not important. From this point on, at halftime, goals were not important. The match was solved, right? This match was over. For me, and Robert said to me, you know, how can this be? How can goals not be important? You know, what are you talking about? Like, I'm insane. And I'm like, I want to see quality of play. I want to see playing with a purpose. I want to see playing with an idea. I want to see, if you want to possess, but possess with quality. Switch the fields. You know, be focused in your attack. Do what you want to do. Impose your will on your opponent at this point. You know, and he brought up, you know, goals are important for the fans. And I said, okay, yeah, I can agree with that. And I still agree with that. Goals are definitely important for the fans. But as the U.S. men's national team, the importance was to improve on your quality of play against a lesser opponent to bring it into your next match to build on your success. Okay. And we saw unspirited effort. We saw a lack of care, if you will, in the Canada match. And on the flip side, and I don't want to make this all the U.S. played bad, because Canada played well. They were the ones that played inspired. And they were beating the U.S. every 50-50 ball. That's how you're supposed to play. And we didn't execute that. And I think at this point, you have a problem motivating the troops, right? You have a problem with the guy motivating the troops, and you have a problem above their heads. The problem truly becomes that you and I as pundits can only scream and yell so much, and that's all that we have within our power. I think at this point, and as crazy as this sounds, and you might have even started to see it a little bit, Rob, almost to an extent of boycotting the team, right? Don't show up to support. Don't pay for the tickets. We already know the price of the tickets are already, you know, overly priced. Don't show up. You know, send a message, send a clear message to U.S. soccer. This is not the quality we come to expect now. We are better than this. We have come so far from the 90 World Cup, from the 94 hosting of the World Cup. We have come so far in the 30 years that we're talking about here that this is not us. This is not quality. This is not quality, period. We expect better. And if you can't provide it to us, then we can't support you. I mean, I think that's where we're at, Rob. Don't you think?
I don't see that going to be the case, because,
no, of course,
you know, these people need money,
yeah,
and they need to do something with it. So they're willing to take advantage of it.
I agree. So we'll have to we'll have to see if any changes are made leading into the second leg of the Nations League, leading into World Cup qualifying, because this is a very, very tricky time. These are troubled waters that U.S. soccer needs to navigate to get to the promised land of the 2022 World Cup. So let's move on to some of our topics here. And the major one that we want to talk about is MLS. Obviously, we kicked off the first weekend of MLS playoffs. All home teams held serve, Rob. Starting out first with, and actually I'm looking at my notes here. Atlanta United really kind of not playing as well as we thought they would. You know, they just came off a 3-0 victory, a 3-1 victory over New England Revolution. The rematch only produces a 1-0 victory. Then we got some excitement. We got the Seattle Sounders winning in extra time. We got Toronto FC absolutely dismantling DC United on Saturday. And then Real Salt Lake turning in a great performance at home to knock off the Portland Timbers as well. So we saw those teams advance. The Philadelphia Union come in on Sunday, fall behind 3-1 to the New York Red Bull, only to even the score and then win in extra time. A massive heroic effort on the Philadelphia Union. Their reward for that is going to be traveling to Atlanta midweek here to face the defending champions. And then Minnesota United, the only home team to lose in this round of the playoffs, 2-1 to the LA Galaxy. They did manage a late goal, which kind of gave them some life, but in the end, weren't able to do it. Rob, I want to come to you first because something you had mentioned to me, and it kind of played into our Libertadores discussion a little bit, is the idea of the one-off match. No longer home-on-home here, so there was a lot of added excitement in these four, these six playoff matches. There was a lot of fire in them, and we saw two extra time matches. We saw very close matches other than the Toronto FC one. Do you feel that the single match playoff added an extra layer of excitement so far this weekend?
Absolutely, because I feel that there's more to play for. And when you're under that kind of pressure to perform well and realize that you don't have a second chance, meaning a second leg, You go out there to perform, and I think that's what you see. I think with the exception of probably the Toronto game, but, you know, it was an extra time, and even then, all the games were dramatic.
Yeah.
So it's been special to watch, and I generally hope that maybe if MLS is going to follow that route, I think they should do it. I think they should definitely do something similar. Maybe, you know, because they do it for the MLS Cup final. Why not do it for the semifinals and the finals? But then the argument says, yeah, but, you know, you have to give away the other team a chance. It was like, no, you earn that chance of what you do in the regular season. You become a top seed because you perform well and you won more games. It's not their fault that they were just better than you. It was your fault. So it brings more pressure. So I would love to see that be done in the future, where these conference semifinals and these conference finals become one straight out knockout, like in a World Cup or a Euro or a Copa America. I think that would be awesome to see.
I agree. And again, other than the TFC goal match, which was 5-1, the Atlanta United goal scored in the 70th minute to win that. So obviously late heroics there. Seattle Sounders and Dallas were extra time. Union and Red Bull were extra time. Real Salt Lake, 87th minute on that one for the game winner. And Minnesota United, the goal to make it 2-1 by Minnesota United was also an 87th-minute goal. So late goals, late heroics, late drama, I think, like you said, has added to it. We're gonna dive into the matches of the week in a little bit, which will give you the MLS matches to look at. And I think we'll talk about, because now we're going to factor in LAFC, we're going to factor in NYCFC, the top two seeds in each group. So I think it's going to be some interesting times coming up as well. You know, Rob, everything else going on, I think we're going to skip the Champions League discussion for tonight because I think we've got plenty going on, but we'll give you some Champions League matches. So let's go into match of the week coming up this week, Rob. If you don't mind, I'll do the honors.
Yes.
And this is Rob, really, especially just looking at the schedule. Wednesday, call out sick. Seriously, just call out sick because you're going to be on the couch watching all day. On Tuesday, Atletico Madrid, Bayer Leverkusen. That's 12:55 p.m. in the Champions League tilt. 3 p.m. gives you Manchester City, Atalanta. And then the Copa Libertadores match. Again, the 2-0 aggregate to River Plate. River go to La Bombonera to face Boca Juniors in the second leg of that matchup. Wednesday, we start out at 12:55. Ajax-Chelsea with a tasty one in the Champions League. at 3 p.m. We have Inter Borussia Dortmund in that hotly contested group with Barcelona as well. NYCFC then kicks off the MLS Cup semifinals in the, I'm sorry, the quarterfinals in against Toronto at home at Yankee Stadium, unfortunately, Rob, at 7 p.m. Copa Libertadores, Flamengo Gremio with their second leg after being tied 1-1 is at 8:30. And then the second MLS matchup of the night, Seattle Sounders, Real Salt Lake at 10 p.m. in Seattle. On Thursday, Europa League gives us Roma, Borussia Mönchengladbach at 12:55 p.m. should be a great one. And then MLS takes over with Atlanta United, Philadelphia Union at 8 p.m. in Atlanta. And the one that everyone is looking forward to, I think, Rob, El Tráfico. The fourth matchup we're going to have for MLS Cup is going to be LAFC, LA Galaxy in Los Angeles, 10:30 p.m. This is the match, and I want to kind of just touch on it for a second, Rob, because this is the match LAFC can't win, right? the LA Galaxy is the team that they just can't beat. Do you think they get it done this time? I honestly, for me, Rob, I'm going to go first with the extra rest. I actually think they get it done this time, but man, oh man, they got to face that Galaxy again, and that is not something they're looking forward to. What do you think?
I think they have it. I don't really think they do.
You think LAFC's got it?
I think the way that they're playing and in that rest, that gives them that momentum. Mm-hmm. So I'm giving it there. But, you know, like you said, there's still more to play here. So absolutely. I get them. I get their chance in that.
And also
conference final.
I also want to add that you and I at the beginning of the season, I'm still sticking with it. You and I predicted LAFC would win the title. So
exactly. So
I'm still sticking with it. So let's get back into Europe, because the Bundesliga on Saturday gives us Schalke Borussia Dortmund at 9:30 a.m., which is a great, great matchup. And then on Sunday, we're Sunday heavy with our matches. Liverpool Tottenham Hotspur, 12:30 p.m. in the EPL. La Liga gives us Sevilla Getafe at 1:30 p.m. Serie A gives us Fiorentina Lazio, 3:45 p.m. Fiorentina really turned this one around. And the last match in Europe on the weekend, certainly not least, Le Classique, PSG Marseille, 4 p.m. kickoff on that one. So we've got a full schedule this week of matches to watch, Rob, for sure. Let's go back to the trivia question real quick. And I gave it to you earlier. Claudio Ranieri has now managed his 20th team since joining Sampdoria this week. Name the teams outside of Italy that he's managed, and which team did he manage twice? So I'm looking for 8 teams that he's managed so it's 9 times 8 teams. Can you give me 8 names?
Okay, so I think the one that he had his second stint, was it Valencia?
Valencia, 97 to 99 and 04, yeah. 05. That's the one that Roy got correct.
Okay. I know he managed, obviously, the one that everyone knows him for, Leicester City.
Yeah, Leicester City was in 2015 to 2017.
Greece. He was the head coach of the Greece national team, that I remember.
2014.
Nantes,
17-18, correct.
Yep. Chelsea. Yeah, you go to Chelsea.
2000 to 2004.
That's four.
You got Valencia. 1, 2, 3, 4. You've got 5 of the 8. You got to give me 3 more names.
Three more.
One in each country of Spain, France, and England.
What did he coach in England? Oh, Fulham.
Fulham. 18-19. Yep. Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. France. Monaco,
2012 to 2014.
That's what I remember.
One more.
The last in Spain.
He coached
this
team from 1999 to 2000. In Spain. After Valencia.
Atletico Madrid,
99,
yes,
2000.
Yes, I got it all right.
So Valencia, 97 to 99. Atletico Madrid, 99, 2000. Chelsea, 2000 to 2004. Back to Valencia for 04-05, then in Monaco for 12-14, Greece national team 2014, Leicester City with that magical championship year 15-17, Nantes in 17-18, Fulham 18-19, the trivia answer. So, Rob, without any further items on the docket, do you want me to run the closing music?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. All right. for episode 259 of Low Limit Football. Special thanks again to Roy Namer for joining us from Mundo Albi Celesti. Next week, we will give you Champions League results, and we have, on the moment, very special guest, Mr. Tim Vickery, to join us. I'm sure we'll cover Copa Libertadores as we look forward to the final. So, for episode 259 of Low Limit Football, I am Joe Uccello.
And I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.